Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, three-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Kurt Heelan joins us from NBC Pro Hoops Talk. Happy New Year, Kurt. Hope everything's good.
No, everything's great. How are you doing? Happy New Year to you, man.
My man. So what was your initial reaction when David Stern had the hemorrhage and the aneurysm and was in grave health, and then eventually here he's passed at 77? When you first saw that he was sick, and what happened to him, you had to worry for him. I know I did, and I'm not really surprised that this happened. It's very unfortunate.
Yeah, I just say it was a shock when the first news came out, you know, that he'd had the brain hemorrhage, you know, in a restaurant in New York. But when not only was there just limited news, but when you ask anybody about it, it was pretty clear this was really grave. So by the time the news came down today that he had passed, it really wasn't a surprise anymore. But it, you know, from the day that we'd first heard the news, I think we all kind of started to reflect on just how much he had shaped the game and how much he had meant to the NBA. Because he took over in 1984. Magic and Bird were going at it, but that was still a fragile growing popularity with the league. It hadn't become the international global powerhouse that it was. And, he just totally shaped the league.
So seven teams joined the league, six relocated. He created the WNBA. He was a huge asset there. And he developed the NBA Development League, the G League, yep, of course. And then, this guy was behind. Obviously, he had a huge impact on the Dream Team in the 92 Olympics. I mean, it just goes on and on, the things that he accomplished. He truly did make the league mega profitable and global.
I think the second part of that is huge. I mean, yes, look, he would not have kept his job as long as he did if he didn't make it more profitable for the owners than when he took over. And that part of that was, cleaning up some... there wasn't a salary cap before David Stern, but the league was also the first league to drug test and deal with perception issues along those lines. But the second part of that, which you mentioned, is really, I think, what may ultimately be the legacy longer term. The NBA became a global league. I mean, the NFL is the bigger sport here in America, but the NBA has found a way. Look, it is now the preeminent basketball league in the world. The best players are there. It has the international draw. It has a huge fan base in China, which is, you know, a whole other challenging issue. But I mean, huge fan bases in Europe. It has grown in a way that, you know, Premier League soccer or other sports have. It's taken on that kind of a global brand. And ultimately, while the league will be popular in America, its growth, it's also, you know, financial growth for these owners is in the international popularity, and Stern was at the forefront of that.
So Kurt Heelan with us. You know, he turned a league that was, with the television revenue at the time, there was literally no revenue, into a almost billion-dollar revenue-producing entity on television. It really is incredible what he did with, the league in terms of television.
Yeah, and he was the first person. The other part of his legacy that really lasts is, this was, they weren't sure how to market this, and he was a marketing guy. He was an iron fist in a velvet glove with the way he dealt with things, but he understood that the NBA could market its stars in a way that other sports couldn't. I mean, the sport's a little more intimate in the sense that fans are close to the playing field, the court, in a way that doesn't happen in football or soccer or other sports. Plus, without helmets, without something protecting their heads, you could see their faces, you could see their emotions, you got to know the players, and so they started to market the stars. It was Magic versus Bird. it wasn't the Lakers versus the Celtics. And he understood that. He understood what Michael Jordan could be internationally, not the Chicago Bulls. And putting the players as the face of the league changed it, and changed it for the better, but also made it so much more marketable. And I, he was part of the vision. He was the vision that saw that and what it could be in a way that I don't think many other leagues ever have.
So, Kurt Heelan with us from NBC. How about the way he handled the Magic Johnson HIV situation?
Yeah, that was a delicate situation. And then, you know, Magic comes back and some guys don't want to play with him, and there's the whole, you know, the All-Star game that when he comes back. And I think he was progressive in the sense of trying to help people get a grasp on what was going on, and guiding Magic and helping guide Magic to get people to understand what could and couldn't be done with that disease. And so he had a real vision for and a real loyalty to those kind of, you know, those players in those situations. He was a great friend to a lot of guys and helped them through that. But he helped Magic. He helped Magic, but I think, you know, Magic certainly helped him and the league grow as well with that.
How do you think Silver's doing?
I think Silver's done really well. He's a modern CEO. David Stern, like I said, was more, you know, old school, authoritarian, my way or the highway. Adam Silver is a consensus builder, and I think that fits better with a modern generation of owner and a modern generation of fan, and just how you run the business. But I will add this: in terms of direction of the league, I don't know that you're seeing a dramatic change from what was and what would have been. There's some things that might have been different. Look, David Stern never dealt with Donald Sterling in the way that Adam Silver did. But on the flip side of that, I don't really think in terms of direction of the league there's much difference. I think there's a style difference in how they handle things. But I think that in terms of where they want to take the league and the visions they have, it's pretty much a lockstep.
Kurt Heelan with us from NBC. Do you think LeBron James will pass Kareem Abdul-Jabbar as the all-time leading scorer in the NBA in the next few years?
You know, I used to think no, because that's just a ridiculous number. And you kind of forget that Kareem was knocking down skyhooks and scoring double digits like into his late 30s and 40s, and you're like, man, I don't know that anybody can do that as long. And then I watched LeBron play this year, Scott, and you're like, man, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he can. I mean, he's going to need a couple more seasons of high-level scoring to get there. But you watch him play this year, and you think, yeah, he can probably get there. And like, there's nothing to see to think that he's somehow going to dramatically slow down and not score. So, you know, he said in an interview the other day that he's envisioning it. He can see it now. And I think that changes things. And he's going to stick around for a few more years. I mean, he's made it pretty clear he wants to play with Bronny if and when Bronny enters the league in a few years. I think he hangs around for a while. I think that record may fall. I thought, look, if you'd asked me that 2 years ago, I would have said, nah, no way he gets there. No, I kind of think he might get there.
Do you think it's a good or a bad idea that they show all of Bronny's high school basketball games on national television?
I'm generally not a fan of that. And here's the thing. Ronnie's good, obviously. Like, this is he's a D1 player, right? Like, he's a high-level D1 player. He's going to be good. If you talk to scouts and you talk to people and you ask, hey, is he a pro? Is this guy he is not the highest-ranked kid in his class. Like, he's not – I don't know that he is some sort of lock NBA star like he's getting treated.
Right.
Maybe he develops into that. Maybe he doesn't. He's a high school freshman, Scott. I mean, we don't know what he's going to be. He's not the highest-ranked high school kid out there. And there's interest, but I don't know if it's going to reach that level yet. And I'm not comfortable with that kind of hype being on any high school kid. There's other ones out there as well. And it's always a little uncomfortable to watch guys become superstars and in a certain level when they're high school freshmen and sophomores, because
right.
That's a long way from being a man in the league.
My son's in ninth grade. He's playing high school basketball. He starts. He's a point guard. They're not airing his games on national television. I think it's very bizarre. I think it's all about his dad, and I think it's all about fame and money, and I think it's a lot of it has to do with LeBron and Wade because his kid's there as well. I think it's actually kind of ridiculous. I think, I remember when they were showing his games and when he was playing in Akron. I get it, but I can't even fathom that they're showing because they weren't showing his ninth grade games. They were showing him in his senior year. But I just don't believe in it. I think it's actually ridiculous.
And maybe because of his father, maybe because of his situation, he handles this way. But not from Stanley Roberts on through. There's a long history of guys who were like sure thing locks at that age who didn't pan out. For a variety of reasons. So, hopefully he does. Hopefully he can pan it. He can develop into what he might be able to be. But I'm not sure what that is. He's not a dad. I mean, as good as he might be, he's just,
right.
His dad is a once-in-a-generation player, and this is a lot to put on the shoulders of a ninth grader.
I'm watching him right now playing. The Suns are blowing him out. But the thing is that everybody keeps talking about L.A. is the hotbed for basketball this year. Fair enough. But the thing is, every time, what have I seen him twice maybe play the Clippers? The Clippers beat him. I mean, Kawhi Leonard and George have their number. I don't care what anybody says. And I think Beverly does. I think, Montrezl Harrell does. I think the Zubac does. I think they have their number.
What I like better about the Clippers, as currently constructed, and both of these teams will evolve and change, and maybe Collison, reports are now that Darren Collison is looking at those two teams, and we'll see what happens with Andre Iguodala. And so both of these teams will look different come the playoffs. But as currently constructed, and as mainly constructed heading into the playoffs, what I like better about the Clippers is that they're versatile. They can beat you a variety of ways. The Lakers don't have that, really. I mean, they're getting good play out of their role players right now, but they are essentially a two-man show, and they need other guys to step up, and they kind of have one way they've got to beat you. The Clippers can go small. The Clippers can go big. They've got such versatility with what they can do, and two-way wings are so huge in the playoffs, and the Clippers have two, if not the two best, two of the very best in the league. Just the versatility of how they can attack gives Doc Rivers so many options that I'd like them better in a playoff matchup. And you're right, they've won both games head-to-head, and you can make cases for regular season games or regular season games, and you can make cases, but I just like the versatility and options that the Clippers have to win that series ultimately.
I got to tell you, I was watching a lot of basketball during the holidays, and every night. The other night I watched a game. I don't know if you saw it. The game where the Suns won in Portland. And I thought, I have to tell you, I think Booker, I'm watching them tonight get their ass beat, but that's not the point. My point is, I think Booker and the kid that really blew my mind watching him play was Kelly Oubre. I mean, he is so much better playing with Booker and playing on that Suns team than he was playing in D.C. with Beal and Wall ball hogging and iso ball and hero ball. He looks like a completely different player playing with Booker.
I think Booker's really taken a step forward this year. He got a lot of flack from myself and others about being a little bit empty calorie the last few years. Like, he put up numbers, but were they getting them anywhere? This year, he's genuinely getting them somewhere. Part of it else is, honestly, they did a better job building out that roster. They finally put a real point guard next to him. Ricky Rubio is a legitimately good NBA point guard who knows how to run a team and set guys up and be a pro's pro. And suddenly, how much better they look. Ayton's getting the ball where he could score. Aaron Baines looks fantastic. And they're not as good as the Lakers. They're not as an elite team, but they look like a competent NBA team, which is a kind of huge leap forward, Scott, compared to where they've been the last few years. And I think that bringing in Rubio and just bringing in some veterans to go with them and teach them what it's going to put them in better positions and teach them how to win has just been huge for them.
It really has. And what do you think of Melo tonight going off at the Garden? He was the leading scorer and had 26, and he was 11 of 17, hit three bombs, seven boards. They were cheering for him. It was a big night for him.
Yeah, I have to say, it was a great emotional night for him to kind of, cathartic night for him, I guess, to kind of get that out and play well in a place that, you know, where the fans really accepted him and really welcomed him back. So it was so good to see. It's good to see him back playing, honestly, better than I thought he'd play. He struggled a lot more in Oklahoma City and Houston, but they needed him to do different things and step up in ways that I'm not sure he can anymore. Portland just needed a body, man. They needed somebody who was competent and good, and it allowed Melo to kind of find his groove again. And he's looked good for them. He's been a good fit for them. You know, the problem is that that's not a great team. It's unfortunately for them, this kind of team they really miss Jusuf Nurkić. I don't think people realize just how good he was for them last year, and they're just not the same without
him. Yeah, there's no doubt about that, for sure. But I think he's been giving them really good burn. Always love talking NBA Rack with you, Kurt. Happy New Year. Great stuff tonight. We'll catch up again real soon. All the best, brother.
You too, man. Happy New Year to you.
All right, Kurt Heelan of NBC Pro Hoops Talk on a bench.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Northside's and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.